Hi, I'm Dean Crisp. Welcome to Straight Talk on Leadership. This is what we'd like to say is the no BS zone, where we give you leadership tips, ideas, and practical suggestions to help you become a top leadership performer. Our goal is simple: help you become the best version of yourself and reach your highest potential as a leader. So sit back, turn up the volume, be ready to change your life. Hey folks, Dean Crisp. Wow. Great to be back in the studio. As we said in our teaser, this is going to be a special edition. This is going to be about questions we get frequently from the classroom, questions we get from our email network, questions we get from the podcast. And we're just going to hit an array. We're going to do just a what I call a round robin here. I call these like freestyling today. We're going to do a freestyling podcast where Kelly Corbin, I'm joined with her in the studio. She's actually in her studio in Greenville, South Carolina, and I'm in my studio in Asheville, North Carolina. And we're going to be talking about these questions and these life lessons that we want, that people frequently ask. And maybe you've got the same questions. And so, Kelly, welcome today. Thank you again for producing the podcast.
Absolutely. Glad to be here, Dean. This is going to be an important topic, I think, today for a lot of our listeners.
Oh, yeah, I'm excited to do it, you know, because I always get a lot of questions and sometimes I don't get time to spend all the time I need and answering some of these. And I thought, man, we got some unanswered questions out there. So today, in today's podcast, we're going to talk about some of those. And I think you're really going to enjoy some of the questions and we'll see where our answers go today. And Kelly has got some of those prepared for us. But, you know, folks, LHLN, Leaders Helping Leaders Network, we've had an exciting few weeks, as we always say on these podcasts. I've been traveling quite a bit, although it is the summer break. I was able to take a couple of days off and, you know, kind of sit back and enjoy the family on the 4th and really, really enjoyed seeing all the grandbabies and just loved that experience, as you know, as you can imagine. And I hope all of you have had a chance to kind of take it easy, rest a little bit, you know, get ready for your leadership challenges that are ahead of you. So, you know, Kelly, I really appreciate the fact that we have so many listeners and every single week our podcast numbers are going up. And it's not because, anything. Yeah. And it's not because of it's because of the listeners and people are passing on and telling folks to subscribe and they're sending text messages with the link on it and emailing people. We really, really do appreciate that. And we want to thank all of you listeners out there for you taking the time to join us and to take time to spend your day with us. And what we always want to do on these podcasts is to add value to your life. And we only do them to add value. And, you know, this is number 84. Wow. You know, I read something the other day that said, I know, right? And we're going to have to do something special when we get to 100. But I read the other day that most podcasts kind of dwindle and fizzle out after about 30 or 15 to 30. And here we are at almost 90, which I think is an earmark amount of podcasts. And it's only possible because the people we've had on as guests and the people keep listening. And we want to thank all of you for that. So, Kelly, I want to tell you how much I appreciate you producing these things, making them happen and putting some of the material together. So thank you.
Well, I just know how important they are. I know they provide, it really supplements what our why is as a company, which is to provide inspiration and information and hopefully some instruction that helps the folks out there be better leaders and in both their personal and their professional life.
Well, I know doing them every week kind of is a constant reminder to me to stay content heavy. And you know me, I am absolutely always thinking about content.
Content king.
Well, I don't know about content king, but I'm always thinking about stuff. We had a conversation last week on the telephone. We were talking with the folks at Southwestern Virginia, the Criminal Justice Training Council there. And it was just crazy. Just in a conversation, we were talking about all kind of content. I mean, a couple of them said, man, we need to take notes during this conversation. We were just having a normal conversation about the class that we did the week before. And
what a
we
great
always
group
like
of
to
people.
Do a follow-up. Oh, yeah. They were great tremendous. People. We had 56 chiefs and sheriffs from Southwestern Virginia. That's, if you don't know, that's up in the area of Bristol, Tennessee, and that's NASCAR country up there. And so we had a lot of people in the classroom. It's really good. Enjoyed it. So, well, Kelly, I guess, You know, we do have some classes coming up.
We do
have some classes coming up. You want to tell them about them?
Yeah. If you hear this week and want to join us in Nashville next week, Dean's Teaching Intentional Leadership, just get on the phone and give me a call as soon as you hear this. And then from there, you're going to St. Louis to teach a series of workshops. So folks in the Gateway City, be sure to let me know if you want to attend one of those one-day workshops. They're on our website. And then the last week, you're going to Pensacola to teach Warrior Guardian. And then we start all over again in August. You're going to Portland, Maine for Master Presenter and a couple other places. I got to go back and look at the schedule, but you're pretty busy till Labor Day and even beyond. So it's a good thing. Yeah, well, keeps me hopping for sure.
You know, we try to stay busy because we just love what we do. We love being in the classroom with people, and we love seeing lives changed. All of our courses are intentional leadership. We've just been very fortunate to find the right material at the right time for folks. And the Warrior Guardian is the one that has really been a hit lately, with just talking about the policing in the new world and how it is to police as a warrior and a guardian at the same time, and really connect with your community. That's not easy to do.
And well, and that's a great
presenter.
Yes. The master presenter's been just every single one of the evaluations that I read has life-changing, revelatory, changed my worldview, changed my mindset about leadership. I mean, just, it's definitely making a huge impact. And I know that really inspires you to keep teaching it and to push it forward.
Well, it's actually a master leadership course and a master presenter, where I understand that my leadership career really never kind of took off until I learned how to communicate and until I learned how to really present myself in a way that would get people to believe in me. And it's all about connection. And, you know, we talk about that in that classroom, and that's just a kind of a tremendous thing. We do have some videos we're going to be cutting loose here shortly about not only that, but some other thing in topics. So we appreciate all you folks out there. Thank you so much. All right, Kelly, let's get down to business here.
Well, let's get started with some questions that you usually get in the classroom. I know that on breaks and stuff, sometimes you can't even get a break because people are just really anxious to ask you about how they go about leading themselves. I mean, how can they be better leaders through personal development? I know some of the ones are how you get started, how to get started doing that for yourself and being more disciplined and all those kind of things. So let's start with that one. If you were giving advice to a young person that's just been promoted or getting ready to be promoted, what would you say to them in terms of their personal development?
Well, you know, I think that personal development and growth is probably the most important component for any leader. And it's the one that's most overlooked. And it's the one that we assume we get with experience and time. And that was okay 25 years ago or 30 years ago, when we basically just followed simple guidelines, simple procedures. The world was a bit less complex than it is now. Quite a bit less complex. You didn't deal with the social medias and the new generation of employees. And when leadership's always been simple, but not easy, but it's also been very complex at the same time. And the one area that I see most people absolutely skip over is their personal development. Now, I know that a lot of you out there are going to say, well, you know, I do personal development. There's a difference between personally working out and then personally developing. So I want you to know that difference. It's like going to a gym. Let's use the physical fitness as an example. If you get to a certain level of physical fitness, you have a tendency to stop training and only work out, which means that now you're at a maintenance level to kind of do the same things that you did the day before and the week before, meaning that, let's say I get into running in a regimen of running. Well, I get into a certain level, and then what I do is I kind of level myself out, and I don't really push myself anytime during that week, but I'll run the same distance and I might run a day more, but I'm literally just maintaining. So a lot of people get to the level of leadership where they simply think they're progressing or developing, but they're literally maintaining. And so there's a difference between working out with your self-development and training yourself on self-development. And so when you actually train yourself on self-development, you're establishing new guidelines, or you're establishing new above the line kind of performance things where you say, all right, it's not good that I can just go into a meeting now and with my regular folks, now I got to go in and convince people that don't know me, that don't know me as a leader. How do I push myself to reconnect with people who may not know me, which in terms of that, you would be doing a lot of training. In other words, you wouldn't maintain yourself. You'd just train yourself to be better. It's like, if I wanted to establish myself in the physical realm to bench press, let's say something ridiculous, 400 pounds, I'm definitely not going to be doing it bench pressing what I am right now.
Right.
So I'd have to train myself to that level. And what happens a lot of times is we get so busy that we convince ourselves the level that we're at is a level that is increasing our development. But in reality, it's just keeping us pretty much status quo, and we're just literally working out with our leadership.
Well, and I think that I was thinking back to the class that you did in Bristol last week, and there was a conversation there where I think what would help people is if they think about always have at least two or three people that you admire as leaders, whether they're famous or not, it really doesn't matter. But I think what helps is to have people that you admire something about them. Maybe you don't admire the whole package, but there's something that they do that's uniquely better that you want to get better at. And then use that as kind of like your combined avatar to set your goals in terms of what you're going to get better at. For example, one of the things I remember you talking about, I was going through some old notes from a master leadership class you did about a year and a half ago. And you were talking about how to become a really good presenter and a really good connector, you have to develop your own level of intellectual capital. And it's no different than as a leader. One of the better ways you can develop a lot of intellectual capital as a leader is through reading, of course, but then also listening to podcasts. If you're not somebody that can sit down and read a book forever, you know, get one of these apps where it'll have the Audible version of it, or a podcast that recaps the book for you. So you get a sense of what's going on there. And then also seek people out that you can talk to about those things. If you have someone locally that's really good at a particular way of leading that you admire, then talk to them about that and ask them how they developed that. How did they learn those skills? Sometimes it's just a matter of studying that person. You know, I know you do a lot of studying of John Maxwell, for example. I know he's somebody that you really admire.
Well, I mean, John Maxwell is, he's a very wise individual. And as I'm getting older, I certainly appreciate his wisdom with, and I think the one thing that John Maxwell that I see changing with him, and this is a leadership development thing, is, you know, at his age, I think he's 73 years old. At his age, he's continuing to develop himself as a leader. He's continuing to develop himself. And so I want to give people an idea of the difference between working out and developing. Working out would be just reading. That's where you would just read. And then you would just simply read that and say, all right, I got my reading in, now I'm just working out, which kind of triggers our brain to think about different things, but it doesn't push us to different levels. Yes. So what you have to do is you have to read to apply.
Yes.
Meaning that when you read, now you form the application part. And once you form the application part, the next stage would be evaluate the results of what you applied and then make the appropriate change to now adjust yourself to get better. A lot of people stop, like they just read to work out, and their self-development, they fool themselves and believe, and I'm in this regiment where I'm actually improving every day. Well, you're literally not improving. You're just improving your level of what you're achieving, but you're not improving yourself. You're getting more, you're doing more things because, but that doesn't mean you're getting more done. Does that make sense? A lot of people believe.
I think that's a great analogy.
Well, I mean, a lot of people do a lot of things, but they're not getting a lot of things done. And so tomorrow, instead of handling the same problem six times again, now you reduce because you've put some change in there. You put something in there that fixed or helped that. Now you're developing yourself. It's almost like I want people to look at their training and development as an evolution. You should go from evolution to evolution to evolution. You should not just level out and stay there. So I want people to look at their development as a personal evolution of themselves.
Like a stepping process. Yeah.
Well, and knowing that you will never, ever reach your pinnacle. I tell people this a lot, and I think this is like crazy. Like, for example, it's like, let's use the analogy of an athlete. Okay. Let's use a quarterback, for example. So a quarterback literally does hundreds and thousands of reps and never sees any progress until the fourth quarter with very few seconds left. And those thousands of reps finally pay off with one pass that determines the difference between success or failure.
Right.
That's development. You know, that's where you take yourself to that next level. And so when you look at that, it is very difficult to do thousands of reps without seeing any progress immediately. And so people in leadership, you get caught up in the fact that you're doing the same thing, but you're not really developing your skill set. You're just status quo in your skill set. So you got to push yourself to get into an evolution of development where you're at your peak. You know, there's a difference between sustainable effort versus peak effort. And that's a whole nother subject. But when you talk about the biggest problem I see with people is they fool themselves to believe they're literally in a self-development phase when they're just basically in a maintenance phase. So I tell people all the time, be careful of finding that leveling off period. And, you know, I fight that too. I fight those things. That's why I use physical fitness as a way of making sure that I continually stay disciplined, you know. And I said something in last week's podcast that I really love about, you know, Jocko Willink's book. And I'm not that real, you know, I already told you that's a hard book for me to read, but he said something that, you know, discipline will fill the gap when motivation fails.
Correct. Yeah.
That's really true that's in development. Yeah.
And if you have,
so that's a good one.
Set, yeah, absolutely. Well, let's go on to the next thing. Another question that you get a lot, I know, is about how to handle difficult employees. That is a very open-ended topic. It can mean any number of things. So I will throw that out there as an open-ended question, and knowing that you're not going to cover everything on it, but maybe there's one or two aspects of, or a typical avatar difficult employee, maybe somebody that has a negative attitude, that has a tendency to poison other employees, and how you handle that situation.
And I get that quite a bit about handling difficult employees, because everybody out there in podcast world, as well as every world, you have difficult people you deal with, and that doesn't mean they're bad people. It just means that they have kind of went off the rails when it comes to organizational understanding, vision, mission, trying to be a part of a team. You have to realize something about every employee. They are a part of a team somewhere. It may not be your team, but they're a team somewhere. And somewhere they jumped off, you know, your team, and now they're on another team, and then they start. So what I tell people with problem employees is, okay, first of all, let's do an analysis of the person. Now, there is what I call, you know, the bell-shaped curve, where you have 10% on the left who are not, are your lowest performers, then 10% on your right who are your highest performers, and then in the middle is like 80%. Right. What you realize is every day you as a boss are fighting for that middle group. Yeah. Because that 10% on the left that are so out there and anti what you're trying to do are very difficult to bring back. So I ask people this about a problem employee. I say, if this person is a true problem employee, they're on the verge of being terminal. And what I mean by that is when you have an employee that's on the verge of being terminal, then the fix is very minimal and marginal. So right. The only thing I can recommend for a terminal employee, one that is absolutely so lost that they're literally recruiting other employees to destroy the organization, that's a good indicator of a terminal state, is when a person is literally recruiting others to do destruction inside the organization. That's a good sign of a terminal employee. When they're at that point, it almost is never going to change back to the way you want it to be. It takes a catastrophic life event. But the biggest problem is we don't hold them accountable.
Let's take a short break from the show, and we'll be right back.
Hey, Straight Talk listeners, this is Kelly Corvin, and I want to ask you a question. Do you know your why of leadership? Have you thought about it? Well, when you take one of Dean's live classes, whether it be intentional leadership, master leadership, or his warrior guardian class, you're going to ask and answer that question for yourself. That's what's different about a Dean Crisp class. Make sure that you take one this year. It will take your leadership to the next level, guaranteed. Learn more about each one of our live classes, as well as our virtual and e-courses, at www.lhln.org. Hey, Straight Talk listeners, this is Kelly Corvin, Director of Business Development here at LHLN, just wanting to highlight one of our signature courses, Intentional Leadership. Many of you have taken that class, but many of you have not, and I just wanted to let you know that it is 2.5 days of action-packed, next-level leadership development. I don't care where you are in your journey, you can be starting out as a supervisor or at the executive level. You will learn the new way to lead in the 21st century from one of the top leadership influencers, Dean Crisp. Learn more about that class, where it's being hosted this year, or request to host a class at www.lhln.org.
We have a tendency to just let them wander in the desert and take the people with them, or we send them to the Misfit Toys Island.
Island of where, Misfit Toys, yeah.
Yeah, we send them to the Misfit Toys, or we send them to some assignment that they really don't want to do, nor do we want them to be there, but we try to get them away from employees. And they're like a bad right fielder in baseball. You can't hide them. And so a terrible employee is going to come back and bite you. I do not care where you put them. So what I tell them is you got to diagnose where they are, because you can't use minor surgery on a terminal employee.
Yeah.
And you have to really realize, and a couple of things I always talk about is, what do you want to happen? I mean, I ask people this all the time. What do you want to accomplish with this employee? And they'll be like, well, I want them to totally change that. And I'm like, well, you can forget that unless you have got a lot of time, a lot of energy, and a lot of patience. The problem with that is that amount of time you're putting on that employee is going to kill the other employees.
Yes.
So it's almost like if they're so extreme, I don't really have any answers.
Except it's almost like palliative care, you know, like a terminal illness.
It's like accountability, but you have to hold them accountable, because if you do not hold them accountable, they will literally destroy your organization. Now let's talk about that marginal employee. Let's talk about that one that's in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know, that one, you still have a chance.
Yeah.
Well, the first thing is relational value. Every person, I do not care who you are, where you're from, they want to know a couple of things. Does my boss care about me? Will they help me get to where I want to get to? So the only way to prove that is through relational value, meaning that you spend time with them, you talk to them, You get them to understand you have empathy. You get them to understand that, yes, you know where they're at. And you got to know their history. You got to know why are they where they are. And one of the things people must realize is everyone is somewhere for a reason.
Yeah.
So when you look at your people in your organization, they are throughout that bell-shaped curve. They're somewhere in there for a reason. The ones in the middle generally don't see the motivation. They'll step to either side, left or right, meaning the good and bad, depending on the day. The ones that lean towards the great, they're self-motivated and they find a reason deep inside themselves that intrinsically that kind of pushes them to that other side. The ones on the left side let small things really bother them to the point to where it turns them sour, if you will.
Right.
And so you got to figure out, it's almost like diagnosing a major problem. You either treat the symptoms or you treat the core behaviors that cause the symptoms and the traits that cause the symptoms. So with that being said, I know I've said a lot, but any employee you feel like you've got that chance, that's over to that right side a little bit to the organization where they're screwing, you got a chance with them. Relational values are really going to work with them. And you have to take a slow, gradual, dedicated kind of plan to get them on track. But you got to remember, when you do that, you got to communicate with your bosses what you're doing. You can't take a problem employee and try to fix them without the bosses be on board. Because when they see you hanging out with them trying to fix them, they'll think you're on their side. So it's just the realities of where it is. And so communications is key. Relational values are key. Problem employees, I could do a whole week on. So,
no question. Well, and I was just going to add that I think that one of the things where we have seen that work really well is in our coaching program that we've done, where we've taken employees and their immediate supervisors and really worked with them to see things go into a different direction. When they have that partnership, you really start to see a real change in mindset, which is really what you're going for, is to get that mindset shift. Doesn't necessarily fix everybody, but it certainly pushes it in the right direction when you have the supervisor and the employee working together in partnership to get better together.
Well, you got to give them a reason to be a part of the team. And I mean, that's a real big one there. So, all right. Great question. I appreciate that one. I love that.
Yeah. So the third one I think we'll end on, because it's also important and it kind of will kind of pull it together here, is we've talked about, you know, leading yourself with the first question and then leading others when you're dealing with employees. And then this one is kind of more all encompassing because it kind of addresses a lot of the cultural issues that we've been seeing and just the environmental factors that have been going on in the last year within law enforcement in particular. And that is, how do you motivate your organization and your employees during difficult times like law enforcement has experienced over the last year?
Well, I mean, again, that's a difficult question for a lot of us. But I think that when you look at leadership in today's world with law enforcement particularly, we're seeing one of the most difficult times of leading, because leading requires a lot of time. And there are a lot of other things that bosses have to make sure. If you were to look at a boss and I were to say, if I were to ask the normal boss, if I were to say, evaluate your time in terms of what you really generally have to get done, most bosses are going to be bogged down with paperwork and things that administrative issues, no doubt about it. And so there's very little time for them, or they will say there's very little time for them to spend with their people. There is no substitute for spending time with your people. And what I'd like to see is in most cases, you see like a 70% administrative duties for people and a 30% where they're really literally leading or trying to lead, or even less than that.
Yeah.
That needs to be flipped.
Yeah.
And a lot of people play the mistake of playing the short game or the long game in leadership. And the difference of that is, the short game is where you manipulate the employees, you force them to do what they got to do. You tell them follow policy and procedures. You tell them do their job. You tell them they get paid to do it. That's the short game version. The long game version is when you inspire employees, you get them to see the bigger picture. You get them to realize they're doing a job that's really pretty special, and they're doing a job that is really, really needed. And the thing about it is they see that every day. The public doesn't see that every day, but the cops out there on the street see that every day. And so when you talk about leading people like that, it's very difficult to lead someone if they don't really know how important they are to the organization. And you look at our culture and our organization, one thing that none of us have been trained on, and none of us have ever really had a lot of leadership training in, is one of the most difficult problems that's facing the paralyzing of cops today is a thing that I call the psychological safety of the cop.
Yeah.
Now, we do a lot to make cops physically safe. We give them armor, we give them guns, we give them pepper spray, we give them tasers, but we don't do a lot for the psychological safety of the cop. And there's really two considerations in the psychological safety of a cop. One is, if I do something, do the bosses support me? And again, if I do something, does my community that I do it for support me? So in both instances, over the last several years, law enforcement agencies have withdrawn support from police officers, even in seemingly justifiable shooting things. And what cops have to realize is that organizations, as a rule, are not going to stick their neck out for one individual.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. I mean, you think about one, you think about any industry out there. You think about any industry. I don't care who it is. Let's talk about Apple, you know, computers. Let's talk about Chick-fil-A restaurants. Let's talk, well, you know, I'm talking about some of these premier ones where everybody knows.
Right.
Let's talk about these. They will sacrifice an employee in a second. And it's not because they don't appreciate their employees, but when employees seemingly get out of line or create difficult circumstances for them, they tend to sacrifice them. And that's just the nature of organizational structure, is to purge a person that's causing them some kind of issues. Now, I'm not trying to tell people out there that cops cause issues. I'm just telling you that when cops have shootings and they seem to go wrong, then the organization itself takes a beating. And a lot of times the easy way out is to sacrifice the cop. And that's what you've seen. You've seen cops, and justifiably so, in a lot of these cases we've seen where cops are just have done just ridiculous things that are just defy good sense. And we're not talking about those cases. We're talking about those marginal cases where, you know, like the young girl that shot, the young girl that was shot, the 16-year-old was shot by the cop because she was wielding a knife and was trying to kill the other girl. I mean, and there is no place in America that
there's no good outcome there.
Well, there is no place in America where a cop is not trained to shoot that person. I don't care it is, where it's not.
And you're not going to shoot him. You're not going to aim for him in the leg or the arm, because those are, you're likely to miss, much more likely to miss.
First of all, you're not that good of a marksman. And second of all, you're going to shoot to stop the threat. And shooting you in the arm, in the leg, when you're trying to stab me, is not going to stop the threat. You got to cut them off at either, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But so no one is trained for that. But when you do that, here's the organizational dilemma that most organizations in who are led by people is, they don't say anything.
Yeah.
And they do an investigation and they wait till facts. Well, during that period of time, the cops literally feel like they're alone, and they feel like they're on an island. And this generation of people, when they get separated from their group, they have a tendency to believe they're cut off, and they will unplug. You know, they will unplug during tough times, not because they're bad people or not because they're not strong people, but psychologically, they've never been taught these tough times. They've never been taught how to deal with failure. They've never been taught how to deal with disappointment and those type of things. And so they have a tendency to shut down. But one of the things that's happening is that cops need this psychological safety uplift. And when cops feel psychologically unsafe, that they're not going to have the support, it paralyzes them and they're not really sure what to do.
I think also what's happening, at least what I see a lot of just as a civilian looking at the situation, is a couple of factors. Number one, you've got those younger people, the two younger generations, that they don't want to go into a profession that isn't liked right now. And I think in my lifetime, I've never known cops to be hated as much as they are because of what the media has done to the profession in terms of highlighting every negative thing they do and doing very little to highlight the positive or accentuate the positive, if you will. And then that's created another phenomena that's happened in several communities and cities across the country where they're literally taking dollars away from the police department, defunding, if you will. And in many ways, the defamation has led to the defunding and vice versa. And then that's creating a brain drain. And I would love for you to spend a few minutes talking about that particular aspect, because what happens is you see it every day on LinkedIn where they're celebrating the retirement of so-and-so. And there's just a lot of boomers and older Xers that are retiring because they can and they just want out. They're ready to move on to something else. It's not fun anymore. It's not rewarding anymore. And in some cases, they're just ready for a new change. But I do think that's created another dynamic where you have fewer people coming in and you have this large exodus of those that can retire that's leaving the profession in a very awkward situation.
Well, I mean, you've said a lot there for sure. I think that there's a couple of things I want to talk about that I want to make sure that we get across. And you said something that is, that's not a pet peeve of mine. It's kind of a, it's what I believe is an urban legend or an urban, not legend, but an urban, I'm not even sure. It's a myth. Yeah. It's an urban myth. There you go. Thank you. It's an urban myth that is created by police departments. So let me ask you this question. And you know, this is called Straight Talk on Leadership, where it's the no BS zone, mm-hmm. where we try to be straight. So let me ask any police chief, any sheriff, any leader out there in the police world, since when is the news media supposed to be your marketing or PR representatives? First of all, they're not. Second of all, I know what you're going to say, and I hear it right now. I can hear it coming through the podcast world. Well, they should be fair and equal. Well, then since when? I mean, they are going to report sensationalism to what sells to viewers.
Man bites dog instead of dog bites man.
They are literally in it to sell papers, sensationalize it, and get more viewers than next person can. And if they can write a story, and this is where, if we want to blame anybody, blame the community for believing that negative bull crap that mm-hmm. the dang public, the media is putting on there. And you can't, if there's a story, like here's an example. If I'm doing a story at 6 and I say police involved in a shooting tonight, circumstances, we're not really sure yet, or police canine training, we spent the day with them at the canine. Which one are you going to watch? You're going to watch the freaking
the dog
police
one, but
really,
I mean, that's just me. I would watch the dogs, but I'm a canine supporter, so I love the canines. So.
I know you're going to turn in first to the one where the shooting was, and then you may watch the canine. You may watch both, but which one's going to pique your interest? You're going to make sure you don't miss the shooting one. You will rewind and get the canine one later if you have a chance. I mean, that's kind of the way we look at it.
It's more of a
they
human
know
interest
that.
Story.
Yeah, exactly. So they're not our PR relations. One of the things that we need to do as organizations is take more of an active role in selling our story to the public.
What was it that Wayne Ivey was saying last week about that? That he'd rather spend one day in the news cycle than
he was just talking about stories had legs. But Wayne is a whole different animal because Wayne learned years ago that he needed to get his story out. And he's one of the leaders. When you're an elected sheriff, you can rebuke the news and you can create your own, but there's consequences to that. A lot of police chiefs out there, you go rebuking the news, your city manager and your city leaders are going to jump off the bandwagon. So you, it's a careful balance you have to play. But the point I'm making is that our officers and the people out there that are serving in this don't feel psychologically safe like they used to. They don't feel supported by the community, nor do they feel supported by their administration or the leaders. And it's not that we don't have good leaders. It's not that we don't have people going out there and saying, hey, we support you and all that. But in really tough times, a lot of leaders go silent. And it's not because they want to, they're forced to, because they're waiting on a more factual representation of what happened versus a more feeling representation of what happened. And I get that. And I understand that. But we have to increase the psychological safety of our cops, and it's causing a drain on us, and it's paralyzing us, if you will, at the very core. There is no police department in the country that has increased numbers of arrests, that has increased numbers of productivity, or has an increase in most anything since George Floyd. And I do not care who you are. You can blame it on COVID. You can blame it on whatever. But we turned the corner on expectations for police services after George Floyd. And literally most departments are now just trying to figure out what is the new norm of standards and our productivities and our organization, because they've gone down.
What do you say to those leaders what do you see as what the trends are going to be in terms of shaping the future of the profession?
Well, I think the one thing that has to be integrated into organizations nowadays, and this is in any business, is you have to have more of a community understanding. You have to have a better temperature gauge of your community, of what your communities will tolerate and what your community will allow you to do. In some communities, the support of police has been overwhelmingly very, very positive. And I've been in those communities. I've seen those firsthand. And in some agencies, I've seen police budgets increase during this, but it's not the general rule. It's the general, if they've not increased, they've kind of stayed the same, where that's a tepid response to what's going on. And you see the federal government, backing off of police. And I mean, there's all kinds of things. So what I would tell police leaders is don't forget what your mission is. It just means you have to be much more communicative in the execution of your mission. And you have to take responsibility for what happens. When things do go awry, address them head on. Don't wait. Get out there in front of an issue. Make sure that the public understands what your job is. And I think you have to personalize the individual officers more. And it's just a very difficult time because we're not sure what that future really holds. And when you as a leader are uncertain of the future, there's a difference between being uncertain of the future because you're just not planning, and then an uncertainty based upon having no idea what the expectations of service level is going to be. There's a total different. It's almost like Circuit City. Let's take Circuit City, for example. Circuit City didn't see the trend. They didn't see the computer. They didn't see the computer world. So they basically did business the same way. And then all of a sudden they're out of business because they're using these big box stores where they think people are going to come in and just buy things. They didn't see the technology where it was forcing prices down and it was forcing people to buy things online. And it was forcing a customer experience outside of the personal service level, if you will. And they didn't see that. And that's exactly the way police departments are now. Every single cop, like if I was going to tell a police chief and I was talking about, or a sheriff, I'd say one of the recommendations I'd have is make sure that every single cop understands the importance of proving legitimacy at every single call. That is really hard to do.
Yeah.
And used to, when you got out of the car, there was an instantaneous legitimacy because you were wearing a uniform and driving a police car. Now there's an almost instant disconnection and disgruntlement where people are proving their points to you, and they don't respect authority like they used to. I'd tell my cops a couple of things. I'd say, number one, procedural justice is extremely important. meaning do what you should do, not what you can. Secondarily, go overly conscious of the fact you have to prove legitimacy, which means connection. And sometimes we don't have time to do all that stuff. I get that. I've been in these exigent circumstances, just like all the people out there who have been cops have. You can't do that when somebody's shooting. You can't go out there and prove legitimate. You just have to jump out and respond. But I'm talking about the 95% of the time where that can actually be done. And you kind of have to listen, and you have to listen to what people are saying. The second thing you have to do is explain. You kind of have to explain what people are saying or what you're doing. Like, let me explain what's going on. And then you have to treat everybody equal. And when you treat everybody equitably and fair, and then you have to leave everybody with their dignity. That's kind of a lead model, you know, listen, explain, treat people equally, and leave people with their dignity. That's kind of a short, simple thing, if you will. And some agencies are using that as a model that started in Seattle many years ago, but it's just a way to connect. And that's pretty much, we as police officers didn't connect many years ago. We used our cars and our computers to stay disconnected, but literally they were meant to be connectors, and we turned them into disconnectors.
Yeah. What do you say though to, I think, just the average citizen out there and even the B cop, you know, that's just out on patrol? How, I guess my concern would be, and I think we're already seeing that in the rise in crime statistics in some cities, is they're just not responding to some of those calls. They're not pulling that car over. They're not going into that particular area if it's really bad. They've been pulled back either because of the politicians or because of lack of manpower.
Well, I mean, there, you know, one of the things I say is that when you have a certain mojo about your job, you have now, you know, I'm not saying moxie, out of control, where you think you're big and bad and all that stuff, but being a police officer requires a certain mojo. You have to have self-confidence. You have to have courage. You have to have an ability to understand what the law is. You have to have an ability to understand what your procedures are and what all those things that guide you. But you have to have a certain moxie about you where you are the public guardian. If I don't ever want a police officer or a guardian or a warrior for me not to have moxie. They have to have that mojo, you know,
that self-confidence. Yeah,
that's right. And that's that self-confidence. And I think as a profession, we have witnessed law enforcement losing its mojo. And when you have a tendency to lose your mojo and your moxie and your self-confidence, you're in for a long haul, because it's like, you know, as well as I do, the predators recognize when self-confidence goes to the toilet, and when self-confidence goes down the drain, they take full advantage of it. You're seeing
They'll fill the vacuum. Yeah, they'll fill the vacuum.
So as chiefs and sheriffs, we got to find a way to direct our organizations to get our mojo back, not in a cocky, confident way, but in a way of us understanding we got a job that the public absolutely depends on us. We are the first line of defense. We're the only line of defense. And, you know, there's a difference between realizing the first line and the only line, and that's what we are. And you have to get your mojo back. And I would try to help cops recognize that let's get our confidence back. Let's get our support back. Let's get our communities back. And we got to go on the offense instead of the defense. And right now, most agencies are on the defense, and most leaders are on the defense. They literally, in the middle of the night, are literally waking up hoping their phone doesn't ring, that because they know it's something that's going to go awry and it's going to be majorly a problem. So we got to get our confidence and our mojo back.
Definitely. Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. I know that there are many more questions, which we can certainly dive into in another episode coming up. Is there anything that you want to wrap up with, or a question that came to mind while we were talking that you want to cover?
I mean, you know, Kelly, I think you're right. That's a great place to jump off right there. And I love doing these. And thank you for helping me with the questions. We've been talking about doing an episode where we just answer some questions, and I appreciate that. And we want to encourage people, write those questions to us, write those comments, let us know what you're thinking. We absolutely love to get those. And we appreciate you being a part of the Leaders Helping Leaders Network. We appreciate you being a part of our podcast. Keep our numbers growing. It does not happen without you. We love you folks out there. Thank you for being a part of our team. You're our family to us. We hope we've added value to you today. And again, thanks for being part of our team. With that, I'm Dean Crisp, and until next time, thank you.
Thank you for listening to Straight Talk on Leadership with Dean Crisp. Make sure you like and subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss an episode. You can go to www.lhln.org to find upcoming classes where you can book Dean for his new class. And you can also check out his new book, Essential Leadership Lessons from the Thin Blue Line. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.